Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Business Beyond Performance podcast. My name is Matt Powell, along here with my luscious co-host, Joe Staub.
Thank you.
How are we doing, brother?
Not bad, man. Slowly just chipping away. It was a busy day today, so excited to get into this episode and talk to someone who a lot of people need to hear because she is an expert at helping the cognitive mental side of the performance game.
Yeah, this is somebody that I've won on the podcast, somebody that I respect as a human being. Megan Sullivan has done such a fantastic job of improving herself from an educational standpoint, and then she's gone on to work with the Air Force, and now she's working with special operations on the tactical side. She has just done a fantastic job putting together programs, education, and then also running her own, you know, subject matter expert consulting on the side, working with shooters and competitive athletes and all these other amazing people. So she is definitely a person to listen to if you're early in your stages and wanting to learn how you can also better yourself from a side hustle standpoint.
No, I think that was kind of the big thing. And obviously, you know, she even gets into possibly getting into some real estate kind of stuff. You know, she mentions she's considering dabbling. But, you know, while everyone kind of is coming to this for, you know, like we talk about in episode zero, this is also one of those moments where you can take the skill set she has and apply it to other things. So what she's talking about in terms of developing, you know, your mental faculty, your confidence, you know, your strength in your brain, if that's one way to say it, is huge for you as a listener to then go do your side hustle. So I took a lot out of this just because, again, while she wasn't super, you know, business terminology, ROI, dollars and cents, she was some of those intrinsic, you know, the fortitude side of having the resiliency to go attack that and then also overcome the challenge of, you know, hey, you may not make $1 million the first time, you may lose some money, but you still got to be in the game. So I really enjoyed having her on.
For sure. And the other thing that I think we both really enjoyed about Dr. Megan Sullivan was that she did a fantastic job of reminding us that mental performance or cognitive performance specialists aren't always these rainbows, butterflies. It's okay. You'll do better next time. And all this imagery, some of it's just being the most value-based and action-based people you can be, which is something a lot of the no-nonsense listeners can take and actually apply, as opposed to some of the other more deeper thinking or deeper emotional side, which sometimes doesn't really click with some people and doesn't help them to actually reach their goals. So I think she did a fantastic job. She knocked it out of the park. Without any further delay, let's get into episode two with Dr. Megan Sullivan. All right. Hey, guys, thanks for coming in. Today we're here with Megan Sullivan, somebody who works with special operations from a mental and performance and a cognitive standpoint, so a little different than our usual guest. And we're excited to have her here and have her talk about her values. And not only that, but how she can also work in with entrepreneurs and how they can take things and skills and habits from her and apply them to what they want to do. So, Megan, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Would you mind going over kind of your broad strokes of what you do and what your beliefs are as like a cognitive specialist and kind of how you do that?
Yeah, so I'll take you back a little bit. My background's in educational psychology with a specialization in sports psychology. So I was an athlete all throughout college and kind of sparked my interest through my own experiences about what training the mental side of performance might look like. I wasn't really familiar with any job opportunities with that line of work, but did some research and found a program. Fast forward to right now, ended up pursuing higher education, got my master's, my PhD as well, and knew that I wanted to work with the military. Through my experiences as an athlete, I value sport, obviously, but at the end of the day, working with the military was a much more rewarding prospect for me. And so my first job, I worked over in Texas at a joint Intel training schoolhouse. I did that for a little over a year. And that work was more geared towards the educational psychology side of the house. So very heavy on instruction and teaching and how do we improve our study habits to increase information retention. And that was all well and good, but that wasn't really what I was looking to do longer term. I wanted to get back to more of traditional performance type work. So another opportunity came up where I'm currently at. And day-to-days are just much more ingrained with traditional types of performance, physical work, and really identifying the mental components that go into tough physical military style of work. So kind of my background really stems from more of what's considered an acceptance and commitment approach. And that's kind of in stark contrast with what's considered to be more of a change approach. So for layman's terms, more of a change approach says that, hey, if I have this quote-unquote negative thought, I need to change that thought and I need to swap it out for a positive thought before I can proceed. Whereas an acceptance approach says, you know what, I'm going to have thoughts, feelings, emotions regardless. It doesn't matter if they're positive, negative, good, bad, right, or wrong, because they're going to be there anyway. And so if I can just accept that those things are going to pop up outside of my control, then I can focus my energy and my attention more on my behaviors. And what are the behaviors I can hone in on despite those mental factors, thoughts, feelings, emotions being present? And so that's really what I try to convey in my initial meetings with folks is, how do you start to learn to accept things that are beyond your control, mentally speaking, thoughts, feelings, emotions, and really focus your energy and attention on your behaviors and how those can start to drive your performance.
That's very cool. I need you in my house. I got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I got a former athlete wife who's the most hyper-competitive person I've ever met. And then I'm a half competitive, half, you know, I'm just here. So yeah, no shit, Doc, anytime you want to come over, you can case study us to, I'll pay.
All right. That sounds good. That's what we're looking for.
Look at that side hustle already created right here.
Oh, absolutely. Here. Absolutely. What sport did you do in college?
I played softball my whole life.
Oh, you're one of those.
But I hit from the right side, the good side.
No, I did track and field. My wife did as well. She was significantly better than I ever was. I was like just an average person. She was like national level.
Average Joe.
Yeah. Nah, jack of all trades, master of none. Seriously, I did the decathlon. That's just what I was, you know.
So Megan, one of the best things that we went through when we first talked, and you know, you got a job in special operations, and we were talking about some, you know, stories back and forth about working with that, since we both have experience there. I had never heard of values-based coaching before and kind of doing it from a cognitive standpoint that way. Can you give an example or a couple examples of what you've done in the past? So I know you said behavior, right? So you're all about changing behavior as opposed to, I need to think positive all the time, which is obviously impossible. And anybody who knows guys in that field, Rizzo comes to mind, Joe, they are not people who are going to be positive all the time, and that's okay. So how do you take that and apply that? Or can you give me an example of how you applied that, please?
Sure. So right along with the acceptance approach, one of the main tenets of that is what's called values-based action. And that's kind of directly opposed to emotion-based action. Emotion-based action says that however I'm feeling in this particular moment, my behaviors are going to be consistent with that feeling. So if I'm frustrated, I might quit. If I'm tired, I'm going to put in less energy. And basically your behaviors follow however you're feeling at any given point. So you can imagine that leads to pretty inconsistent behaviors because our emotions are always changing. But with a values-based approach, we ask guys to identify first and foremost, what are some of the things that you really value as a performer, as a competitor, as a spouse, whatever role that you're considering, and what are the specific behaviors that support or uphold that value? So sometimes people get tripped up on what values might look like. So another way to think of that is just what's important to you, or how do you want to represent yourself? Or looking back on your life 50 years from now, how do you want people to remember you? What do you want to be known for? So different ways to kind of conceptualize what values might look like to make it easier to identify. But as an example, if somebody, you know, consistently says that I want to finish what I start, or I value persistence, that's always the example that I give. If I value persistence, then what are the behaviors I can demonstrate that uphold that value of persistence? Well, I can keep pushing, even though I might feel tired. Or I can keep moving forward. I can ask for help. I can do X, Y, or Z despite how I'm feeling to demonstrate or personify persistence. And so it gets to this idea that it doesn't matter what I'm thinking or feeling. It matters what I value. And in that moment when my thoughts or feelings are trying to take me left or right, how can I remember what it is that I value and what that behavior is that I can latch onto right now to uphold that value?
Oh, that's really cool. You at one point you referenced using that within the different roles you have as an individual person, mm-hmm. and spouse was one of the ones you used. What do you see? I'm curious just because of who you work with, and you know, there's the civilian stereotype of the people you have, mm-hmm. and then there's the actual inner workings of those people in a dynamic doing what they do, particularly the group of people you have. How is it that they manage that from a value-based position with their spouse. And one of the things you work on with them, I think some of our audience, not just from the military sector, but from the coaching and from the, you know, the time intensive dedication, because you're committed to what you're doing, working with a population to achieve the apex of performance, whatever performance is for that group, you don't get the balance of family life, you know, home for dinner every time, holidays. So what things do you work on with your guys or girls from a spouse standpoint that may or may not translate to other people in that intensity of effort and intensity of commitment environment?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I get that quite often. Is one of the most common things that, you know, families or spouses will say is, well, I really value my family time. But then if we say, okay, what does your daily schedule look like? And we see that maybe you have a 30-minute window dedicated to your family. Well, do you then really value what you say you value? And if you do, where's the behavioral support or evidence to demonstrate that? And if that's lacking, then that opens up a point for me to challenge and say, what can we do a little bit differently? But you mentioned the B word, balance. People think we have to have this balance in our lives. And a lot of people think of that in terms of equal amounts of time, which is just, it's never going to happen. We're at work for 8+ hours every day. We're not going to have 8+ hours to spend with our family. And so I think it's really important for folks to consider the quality versus the quantity in that respect. And what does that quality look like? Again, back to behaviors. Maybe you can't sit down for dinner every night. Maybe you're not going to make it home every night. But if you can take 15 minutes to make a video phone call to tuck in your kids before they go to bed, that might be what values-based family time looks like for you.
Doc, I got about 5 dozen people who I can give your phone number to because they need you. So even in the coaching world, I say it to people all the time. When you misalign your actions to your values, you have catastrophe coming down the road. And for me, that was my family's more important. So I got out of coaching specifically to align my actions to my value of, I would rather hang my hat on being a good dad when I'm dead than having won a bunch of championships as a coach. So, you know, right now, especially in the COVID world, there's a lot of people in the coaching world who are lost. Mm-hmm. I wrote a book about some of this stuff. I've talked for people at length about this stuff for years. And I literally could give you about 2 or 3 dozen people who've called me in the last 90 days, 120 days and are lost. And it's sad. And that's, I think, one of the fundamental things is they've misaligned their actions to their values. And they finally hit that point where they said, oh, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I make it such a strong point of emphasis when I first start meeting with people is to actually ask them, have you ever considered what it is that you value? And some people haven't even considered that question. And some people will say, yeah, I know what I value. Of course I do. And then when you ask them to put a behavior to it, there's either a complete mismatch or they don't know what it actually looks like. And so at that point, it's just they're talking and there's no action to follow it up.
Absolutely. So I think one of the things you talked to me about in the very beginning was, one, what are your values? Which I'd never really been asked before. I remember giving you a dumbfounded look and being like, yeah, you know, family, life, all this stuff. So what are some drills that you've done with these people? Like, what are some things we can put in the show notes or things we can put up, you know, wherever, so that people can look at them and actually do them? Or what are drills you recommend in order to kind of narrow that down? I know you mentioned it a couple earlier.
Yeah, there's a couple different routes you can take. I mean, there's sheets with a bunch of different values listed out, which, you know, could be helpful for some people just to get a vocabulary going and get some ideas flowing. You can kind of do like a scorecard game where you say, all right, we're going to knock out round here. Only 3 can make it to the next round. And you can kind of get down to it that way. You can also make this a collaborative effort. So if you are looking to make this more of a family event, like sit down with your spouse or sit down with your kids and say, what are some of the values that we all agree on? And how can we each start to support those? Or if you're in a work environment, get together with your coworkers or superior subordinates and identify, okay, what do we value as a group here? And how can we start to come to consensus on this? But I think expanding vocabulary is really important too, and getting specific with what it is that's important to you. And then of course, how you can demonstrate that.
I like that a lot for sure. One of the things that would probably follow that up is you have a lot of people, or at least I do, a lot of people asking me about different things, right? Whether it's real estate or side hustle, or whatever. And they always come back to, I don't have the time and I don't have the ability to balance that. You know, I've got a wife, I've got a kid, I've got a husband, I've got a, you know, whatever the heck is going on with their personal life. And I don't have the ability to answer their questions. My wife's amazing. I'm able to kind of get it done and my, you know, still be there for my children and my family, but I don't understand how to tell them kind of what you're going through right now and how to coach them. So how would you answer those people, or what can they do? I'm going to keep going with this one more second, but one of the things you really showed me was write out every single second of your day. You kind of do that schedule to kind of show exactly what you're doing for all 24 hours. And that really put a lot of, you know, thought behind what I was doing. And I was able to kind of take out a lot of stuff I didn't need before.
Yeah, absolutely. So writing out your schedule is a really great way, again, to increase that self-awareness. And a lot of times when people say, I don't have the time, what it really translates to is that I'm not willing to invest the time. Mm-hmm. And we've all got the same amount of time in every day. We all know that. And so what are you willing to sacrifice in some areas? And it doesn't have to be every single day. It could just be, hey, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm going to sacrifice this a little bit more in favor of this. And by shifting things around and kind of reframing it as an investment as opposed to maybe an inconvenience, I think that's really important in terms of a mind frame shift. To think of it as, this is might be a little bit uncomfortable right now to push something that I typically do to the side, but what am I gaining from this? And then I meant to mention this before, but in relation to kind of identifying what you value, one of the things you can ask is, what are you most afraid of? And a lot of times what's on the other side of that answer is what you value or what's important to you. And so that could be another route to get at that angle. But I think, you know, getting to the time question back again, it's not so much, I don't have the time. It's just, I'm not willing to invest the time. I'm not willing to do something different in my day-to-day routine to make this a priority. And if that's the case, now comes that, again, that point of self-reflection is this really as important to me as I'm saying that it is?
I love that you used the word investment there. That was such a great word to kind of tie this all together. That was so smart.
Running on the same idea, Doc, you started in one job. You had the skill set to do it, but it wasn't necessarily what you wanted. You transitioned to where you are now, where it's more in your alley and where you actually wanted to be at. How did you take that kind of mindset, everything you just talked about, you know, you did what was necessary to get to where you want to go, but then how did you take that next step and start doing all, you know, as Matt mentioned, some of the side hustle, you know, the mental performance training for shooters on the back end and all the other things I'm sure you have in your warehouse. So how'd you keep taking those steps? Whereas some people, they take that first job and then they just say, okay. And then 7 years later, they're still thinking about it, but they never actually did anything to get there.
Yeah. So I was really fortunate actually, because I didn't actively pursue this to start. I had somebody approach me from the shooting community at work and they said, hey, I've got a buddy who's interested in getting a mental skills coach. Do you do any consulting on the side? And I said, no, I hadn't even considered it really at that point, to be honest. And he said, would you be willing to meet with this guy? I said, yeah, absolutely. And so from there, I think I struck gold with this guy because he's been like a dream client. He does all of his homework. He has constant communication. I couldn't have asked for a better person to start me off on this track. And he's been so helpful with sharing my name and my information with different people in the shooting community. I'm incredibly thankful to him for that. But I saw this as a great opportunity, one, to continue doing more work that I'm really passionate about doing, which is, you know, training mental skills in performance domain. And then also I was like, hey, I can make a little bit extra money on the side, which never hurts anybody. And so with that and kind of his support as well and his willingness to share my information with other people, it kind of lit a fire under me to say, hey, you went to school for as long as you did, you might as well put your knowledge to use and share it with people who can really benefit from it. And so I'm really thankful to this first person who kind of lit this fire under me and said, hey, are you willing to, you know, get going on a side hustle? So that's kind of how I got started with this.
Nice. How have you evolved it? I mean, obviously the word of mouth and the success that first person had, you know, again, it's that snowball. Every coach who coaches an Olympic champion is now the guy or the girl, they're the person because they won, right? You were successful. Mm-hmm. Success attracts eyeballs. It helps bring things in. But what have you done to kind of spin that forward? Or have you just kind of rode it? You know, have you done marketing and social media and all the stuff? Or have you just let that word of mouth naturally, you know, just trickle down? Everyone uses organic growth as the word.
Yeah, kind of a little bit of both. I've been relying a lot on word of mouth at this point, just in these earlier stages, but I'm also trying to set things in motion as well. So like I mentioned, I was an athlete in college, so I reached out to some former teammates who are still in the coaching world, former coaches. I've got some family members as well, kind of on the real estate side of the house, who did some work in real estate as well. So just trying to let them know what I'm doing and say, hey, keep my name in mind if anybody, you know, comes to mind that might be interested in the services that I could provide. So doing my part in terms of networking. And then also, I'm not a huge social media person, but I bit the bullet and I made an Instagram account. So just getting, trying to meet people where they're at, you know, not staying in my comfort zone, but trying to push past that and just make it as easy for people to reach me as they can. And then of course, relying on people word of mouth, like I said, hopefully with Instagram that can start to take off as well.
Yeah. I know we're going to share after. What's your handle? How can people find you on Instagram?
Yeah, so it's Dr. Dr. M. C. Sullivan on Instagram.
Cool.
Like it. So as you're going through this, do you have a goal? Do you have a number of shooters you want to get into? Is there another market or segment you want to get into? Are there other competitive athletes or tactical athletes that you see yourself working with and being happy working with?
So I'm kind of sticking with the shooting realm right now. And then a couple of my contacts from college back in the softball world, they linked me up with a few softball athletes as well. So hopefully just trying to expand as, again, as word of mouth starts to spread. But for right now, I'm not huge on into goal setting, just because, you know, if we set a certain endpoint, we think that that's the end all be all. So I kind of just take things as they come, but I'm also staying proactive in that process. So I'm trying not to get super greedy, because if I say I want to be at this certain spot by this time and I don't make it to that time, well, what does that mean? And so I don't want to, and I encourage other people to do this as well, is not get so fixated on a specific endpoint, because if you feel like that's the only point where you can reach success, then you're probably missing a whole lot of smaller successes on that path to that one point.
Man, I love that too, because so many of the people out there who are probably listening to this are thinking to themselves, I need to make X number of dollars a month, whatever it is, 10,000, 20,000, whatever. And those same people are doing exactly what you're saying. They're coming to themselves and saying, oh man, I didn't make it, I'm a failure. So I love that you said that. That's awesome. Joe, you got another question for her?
Yeah, so going off of that, Doc, what else do you do for your mental state? Again, the way you just said it, I loved it, because I think me and Matt do the same thing ourselves, just having been athletes and being coaches. The goal is a great marker, but if that's your end point, the next morning you wake up and it's like, again, you're lost, right? There's nothing there. So how do you keep yourself fresh? How do you mentally challenge yourself? How do you rein yourself in? How does Doc Sullivan continue to be Doc Sullivan?
So I'm an avid exerciser. That's kind of my mental release, physical release. And I find that that helps to keep me sane. And in terms of kind of practicing what I preach, I always try to incorporate some sort of mental skill training into everything that I do, just so that when I speak with clients, I can speak to them from a place of experience and not just knowledge or understanding. So I've practiced different mental skills in my workouts. So for example, like effective breathing techniques, I'll practice some mindfulness or just being able to stay focused on my specific task. But I really try to integrate these things throughout my day to day. And I think probably one of the most important ones, which I sort of alluded to a moment ago, is just immersing myself in the process and not getting so consumed by outcomes. And if people can start to appreciate the smaller steps and the smaller valuable steps that they're taking every day, and they can sort of seek out those smaller wins, I think that's a tremendous way to keep that momentum going, especially when the setbacks hit. Because if you can start to kind of keep track, and this is another thing that I do as well, is every day at 8 p.m. I have an alert that goes off and it just asks me, reminds me to check in with myself for the whole day that just passed. And I'll write down, you know, what was my mood like? What are some of the things that I accomplished? What were some of the hurdles that I encountered? What did I do to overcome those hurdles? And constantly trying to cultivate a degree of self-awareness. So just remembering to check in with myself, be patient with myself, but then also keep pushing myself a little bit each day outside of my comfort zone, whether that's reaching out to a new client or asking new questions or, you know, reaching out to a mentor, whatever the case may be, but just do something a little bit to help move you towards your, you know, quote unquote end mark every day.
Now that flows in perfectly. My next question was going to be, do you find a way to use these skills, you know, as an entrepreneur, as you're starting to grow this business? And I know you and I have also had conversations about real estate as well. So it sounds like you already have that daily kind of check-in. Is there any other like daily skills you do or weekly or monthly where you find yourself using your, you know, degree and your expertise to work your entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I think especially right now, since I'm in the very early stages of both, you know, my consulting, and then I haven't really even started the real estate thing just yet, but I've done a tremendous amount of studying. And so from an investment perspective, like what is the work that I'm putting in leading up to the initial home purchase? And so I've read a ton of books, I listen to podcasts, and I try to appreciate that type of effort, even though it's not leading to money right away or any sort of, you know, typical definition of what success might look like. I'm still able to appreciate, okay, you're doing the work up front right now so that when it comes time to actually cash in, pun intended, then you can, you know, you'll be in a good place to actually hit your mark. And so from the client side as well, from the consulting side, you know, like I said, I'm just starting out. So my client base isn't huge, and I'm reminding myself, like, it's okay. It will build itself as you keep going, but you have to stay humble. You have to stay consistent. And when we talk about, you know, failure or setbacks, it's how are you using your current situation to your advantage? If you do encounter a failure or a setback, are you calling it quits and throwing your hands up and saying, what's the point? There's no growth or progress being made. Hopefully not. And a lot of people, I think they tend to do that because they don't know what else to do. If I don't see my results, then what else is there? But if you can learn how to kind of view failure or setbacks as really invaluable sources of information and data, you can use that information to then inform your next attempt. And I think that's something that I really try to do, especially, like I said, in these early stages. If, hey, if I'm not getting a new client for a month, am I doing something wrong? What can I do differently? How can I start to increase that? Or am I doing everything that I can and just things outside of my control aren't following through just yet?
Nice. So Doc, you're sound very much like my wife at the moment, where we have every book about real estate investing, house flipping, house ownership and leasing, and Bigger Pockets podcasts and all that stuff, right? So, you know, when she said she wanted to get into it as well, you know, we had the conversation. I was like, yeah, spend a year and get yourself knowledgeable, even though it doesn't seem, you know, it's an investment in yourself and your knowledge. Because the way we looked at it is she could draw on her cumulative net of knowledge. She's a physician's assistant. So, you know, same advanced degrees and in the hospital and a lot of customer service people interaction. So she can drive her people skills into the negotiation, into the nuance of getting someone to sell her a house at a good price when they might be resistant, right? So she can take one set of skills and apply it in another while she's learning the industry she wants to be a part of. For you, with your, again, extreme understanding of people and people skills, what have you taken and driven into your learning in that real estate? So, you know, knowing that, you know, at some point you have to negotiate with someone, do you already have the mental judo ready to Jedi mind trick someone? Or, you know, how are you going to take, you know, I guess as I ramble now and try and hone in on an actual question, how are you going to take all the things you are already an expert at and use them in this new thing you're trying to become an expert at? Mm-hmm. And then the second part, have you taken anything you've learned and brought it back to what you're an expert at?
Very good question. So the first one there, I haven't done any of this just yet, so I can only speculate, but I guess, you know, a big part that I already touched on as well is kind of, is what is my process? What are my controllable factors? And I can never control how somebody is going to respond to a negotiation strategy. I can never respond to, or control whether they're going to go through with the deal or not. But all I can really control is what are my actions? What can I control in that process leading up to it? Can I do my homework better? Can I ask for more advice? Can I do X, Y, or Z that's within my control to then help to hopefully influence that outcome? but full well knowing that I can never dictate what the outcome will actually be. And kind of accepting that up front and knowing, okay, you can do all you can do up until a certain point, and that's true for anything in life. You can never control an outcome. Control what you can, do what you can do, and then whatever happens, good, bad, or otherwise, learn from it and use it and go into your next attempt. But I don't have any specific examples necessarily to draw on just yet. But I would imagine that's how I would probably approach it. And then the second part of your question was?
Taking anything you've learned from your new realm and driving it into your current realm.
I would say, let's see. So for my consulting side of the house, I think this one's taught me a lot about, and I kind of knew this before, but everybody's so different. You know, you've got people doing the same sport with shooting, or maybe with softball or a different activity, but learning how to, I guess, read people, meet them where they're at, and then communicate your ideas and information in a way that makes sense for them. And I guess I could kind of link that back into your first question too, is how can I take my understanding and shape it in a way that makes sense for the person that I'm trying to reach? So as opposed to just staying in my bubble and kind of speaking in terms that make sense to me, how can I explain the same concept or convey the same information in a way that's customized for this other person to make them more likely to understand it, to internalize it, and hopefully to act on it?
I love that, because that's something that strength coaches, athletic trainers, physical therapists, they should all hear that about 100 more times, and maybe they'll pick up some of that. I can't tell you how many times I've seen a bad personal trainer or a bad strength coach who doesn't meet the person where they are, and they just sit there and say the same damn cue over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's just the most frustrating thing in the world. So that's awesome that you're already self-aware enough to do that. That's fantastic. So as we go through, I know you kind of already mentioned failure and how you're just going to learn from and use the statistics, because one, you're a robot, and two, you're no, I'm kidding. But as you prep to handle like your failures or potential failures in the future, hopefully there are none, obviously, but in case there are, what are some things you can do from a mental or cognitive standpoint that you recommend people maybe do or recommend that they read, et cetera?
I think one of the best things you can do is to, sounds maybe counterintuitive, but try to make a list of everything that could go wrong. And if you can forecast issues, or if you can reach out to people and say, hey, what are some of the hiccups that you ran into and how did you get through it? The more that you can anticipate what might go wrong, that gives you the opportunity to create a contingency plan to then work through that. Because if the worst case does end up happening, it's going to be an emotional event anyway. So if you can kind of prepare for, okay, what are my next steps? Prepare for that ahead of time. Then the emotional kind of saliency of that event might not be as significant, because you're not trying to deal with the emotional or the stress of it, as well as trying to figure out what to do next. If you have a plan ready to go, I think it's a lot easier to kind of get your head clear and get back on track really quickly. So I would say make a list of things that could go wrong and develop some different contingency plans. Reach out to other people as well. All right. And then, yeah, okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I love that, because, you know, as somebody who's flipped a couple houses, and these were terrible, terrible houses that had everything go wrong, I could tell you those contingencies, if I'd had them with the first couple deals, would have made my life way easier. Instead, I went through exactly what you're talking about with the emotional standpoint of just, this sucks, I hate this, I can't believe I was dumb enough. And then obviously it works out in the end, but having that ability to make those contingencies is awesome.
Yeah. And I'd even add on to that is, before you even start anything, is just kind of examine what your relationship with failure is. And if you view failure as, you know, the end all be all, or as a reflection on who you are as a person, that's going to make it way more difficult to deal with a setback than if you are able to just see failure for what it is, which, like I mentioned, it's just data, it's information. And it's, in many cases, it's your best source of feedback. So welcome it, because you don't have a choice otherwise. You can't, you know, necessarily prevent it from happening. But examine what your relationship is with failure and how can you start to shift that to more of an adaptive relationship possible.
Doc, I love one of the things you said about having context and lucidity around the bad outcome. One of the things I've always stressed to people is, you know, you need your lenses, right? You need your optimist lens, you need your pessimist lens, you need your realist lens, but then you need the truth. because if you live in any one of the three lenses for whatever, you know, for too long, you get real screwed, you know, you go off the deep end. And if you're just bouncing around from all three, constantly trying to be at all different avenues, it's too much. It's too much mental gymnastics, and it's mentally fatiguing. So you kind of need the truth to say, okay, hey, where am I? We're tracking towards the pessimist. Okay, like how awry is this going to go right now? That's just a great thing. I don't think enough people actually give that like deep thought. You know, one of the things tying two ideas together, and if you want to speak on it more, you said you didn't want to set a goal because you didn't want to get lost to the goal because you were kind of taking it as it flows. So how do you take that idea around the other idea of, you know, looking at the right lens, setting up for the failure and understanding it exists, but then also, you know, not setting the goal just to live with the pie in the sky?
Mm-hmm. Man, you got good questions. You're making me think.
You're one with a PhD. You've got a lot. I'm just a former strength coach.
I think, so one of the factors I really like about the acceptance approach is that it doesn't involve any sort of labels in terms of good, bad, right, wrong, positive, negative. And so even with saying up front, hey, what are some of the positive things I might be thinking, or what are some of the negative things I might be feeling? I like to try to encourage people to think about, hey, what would be a helpful response or a helpful solution or an unhelpful response, an unhelpful solution. And that, at least in my experience, has been really effective at kind of neutralizing a situation. Because like I said, in these entrepreneurial endeavors, people are going to be really emotionally invested, and it can be difficult to get that distance between, you know, the experience that you're having and just kind of the awareness of what's going on within that experience. And so people can start to practice, you know, hey, what are some helpful things I can do in the situation, or what are some helpful responses that I could employ if X, Y, or Z happens? What might that look like? Or, you know, what might be some unhelpful responses that I might have? And if I can forecast both of those, and I can be aware of when and if those things actually happen, then I can recognize, okay, this was in the unhelpful category. What can I do differently to shift it to a more helpful solution, or vice versa?
Nice. Very nice.
No, I love it. That was awesome. So before you began this kind of entrepreneurial thing, which is obviously still new for you, what did you do for finances? Like, what were you already doing? Were you already a big saver, a spender? Were you already putting money away?
Yeah. So I have to thank my parents for this one, especially my mom. Right when I hit college, she said, you know what, you should open up a Roth IRA, just start putting in a little bit of money at a time just to start early. So once I hit college, I opened up an IRA, and I've been active with that ever since. But I've always been a saver. I've never liked spending money. It stresses me out still to this day. So I try to save as much as I can. And I make sure that I give myself an allowance too. So before my paycheck even hits my bank account, it's this set amount of money is going to be reserved for my savings account, and it's going to go there before I even have a chance to touch it. Just
so, if you don't mind me asking, 5% I pay myself. I did the work. I get paid first. What do you pay yourself?
Oh boy. I don't do percentages, and I also don't do public math. So I'll get back to you on that one.
Fair enough. Or no, but that, again, great concept. And it's interesting. You said you learned it from your mother. I got it from my grandfather, you know, old timer, the whole bit. And just, he had 10 kids, and every kid had kids. So I'm one of a gazillion little grandchildren this man had. God rest his soul. God love him. And he used to tell us when we were little, I remember being like 5, and he was like, look, when you work, pay yourself first. You did the work, then pay for life. And I've just always done it. So I'm 5%. That's my pay myself first.
Yeah.
You're worth about 5%, Joe. That's probably top dollar right there.
Yeah. It dwaddles some days. I get Pampers ain't cheap, man. So, you know.
So, Megan, was there anything else you were investing in besides obviously the Roth IRA, 401k, et cetera? I'm sure you get some sort of match at some of the places you've worked or working now. What else would you invest in? Were you a stock person, anything else like that?
That's pretty boring. I just did the standard target retirement fund date, which I still do now, and then kind of shift around some of my savings plans just to prep for real estate. But once I get that going, that'll be my primary investment.
So do you have a plan for your shooter, you know, there's shooter money coming in as those people are paying you. Are you immediately going to throw that into real estate? Is that something you want to immediately multiply and kind of add on to? Or is that something that's going to another goal, et cetera?
So right now, my primary focus is to just save enough for a down payment for a decent property. So pretty much everything is getting pulled towards that first purchase.
Awesome. And then what is your goal as far as real estate goes? You're trying to go to multifamily, single family, apartments, et cetera?
Yeah, so I'm planning on partnering with my boyfriend once we're co-located again, but we're going to shoot for a multifamily of some sort, probably a duplex or triplex, but going to steer clear of the single family homes, at least to start, and see what we can do in terms of multifamily.
Gotcha. And once you buy it, are you guys going to house hack? So you guys can save up some of your own mortgage, or are you going to have a separate living residence as well?
Yeah, we're planning on house hacking, so we'll keep you posted on how that goes.
Super excited to hear all about it. Go ahead, Joe.
No, we're at that point. I'm looking at the questions we have set. We're talking. I'm actually really curious about this one, just because I'm sure you could go so many ways with it. What's the worst advice you hear people use in your field, and then also people have told you about trying to get into this new field?
Oh, boy. You're right. This could go a lot of different ways.
Yeah, let it flow, Doc. Let it go.
We'll start in general. I think the worst piece of advice anytime for people in like a performance capacity is to just be confident. I loathe that word. I can't stand it. People think that confidence is a choice, that you can just, hey, just be confident about it. And if it were that simple, why wouldn't everybody be confident all the time, right? So we talk about emotion-based behavior. And at the end of the day, when we talk about confidence, it's I don't feel confident or I do feel confident. So it's a feeling. And if we're latching our behaviors and our choices onto a feeling, and feelings are like a roller coaster, then our performance is never going to be consistent because we're latching to something that's completely volatile. So just be confident. What I would say to that is it doesn't matter if you're confident or not. What matters is your actions. So confidence or lack thereof can coexist with value-driven or important decisions, important behaviors that you want to take. So true confidence would be the first one. Another piece with regards to success, I think I would say, is when people don't define what success looks like for them. And a lot of people kind of go off of society's definition of success, which is usually some version of fame or fortune. And if you are not being clear with yourself about what success actually looks like, then you never know if you're going to hit it. And if you're thinking that it's this certain endpoint, like I mentioned before, you're going to be missing all of the smaller successes along the way. So there's this whole big road up until this endpoint where you're technically unsuccessful because you haven't reached that end mark. And that can be incredibly demotivational and deflating to have that outlook. So I would say not defining success or subscribing to other people's definition of success. And then on top of that, just viewing it as a single endpoint as opposed to, you know, several small markers of success along the way.
Nice. You've referenced the idea of the micro confidence. And again, I learned it from the people who I studied at a very, very low level, your world with, as described as micro confidence. How have you, or what have you taken from your world and now you're trying to go into this real estate world? You know, we're talking, you have the consulting, but we've been honing in on the real estate side. From a micro confidence standpoint, you know, you mentioned doing the little steps of reading the material, then the little step of reallocating your savings, you know, then with your boyfriend looking at, you have a kind of a property pick, a property idea picked out. But within those micro confidences, what have you failed at and where did you realize, that wasn't it? Because, you know, we just talked about it from confidence in the sport side or just in general, but how is that driven into the business side for you?
So we were just practicing analyzing some different properties and we came across a handful. We're like, yeah, this is definitely going to work out. And we did our math and we're like, we can't do public or private math apparently. So it just wasn't working out. And I think not letting that deter us and just saying again, like, okay, what can we learn from this? What are we doing incorrectly? And to the confidence piece again, I'll expand on that a little bit more, is it's okay if you are confident, it's okay if you're not confident, but what I try to encourage people to focus more on is a sense of belief. And the main difference there is that belief is rooted in past experiences. So if I want to have thoughts that are helpful, then I need to create experiences that have helpful results, or create some sort of evidence bank for myself that says, you know what, even though I might not have gotten my outcome, I did these things correctly, or I did these things well, and I know that I can repeat those behaviors. So even if I, you know, did an analysis poorly, maybe there were some aspects of that that I was right on the mark with. And so kind of hunting the good stuff, as they say, and trying to pick out the small pieces within a larger quote unquote failure, I think searching out for those pieces of evidence, that really starts as your foundation for a sense of belief. And that sense of belief is what you can hang your hat on when you're not feeling confident. Because again, it's an emotion. But if I know I've got evidence in the past that's unchanging, then that's not going to go anywhere. And if I can lean into that, despite how I might be feeling or thinking, then that's how you kind of stay connected to where you want to keep going.
Very cool. No, great answer.
Well, I think you said two things there that I definitely want to touch on. I think you definitely talked about having your definition of success, which obviously is, you know, belief focused and values based. And I believe that, I think the audience wants to know what your why is. Like, why do you want to work with shooters? Why do you want to do real estate, et cetera?
Yeah, so for the consulting and the shooting in particular, that's just another avenue for me to do exactly what I want and what I love. And with that, there's no overhead. It's just, it's my business. It's my choice to work with those people how I want to. And I think that's a really liberating experience to have and an opportunity to take advantage of. That as well, in conjunction with the real estate, you know, our long-term goal is to achieve financial independence. And we ultimately want to be able to enjoy life and travel and do things far before, you know, traditional retirement age. And so that's kind of our bigger purpose for wanting to get into this. So yeah, just a sense of independence, professionally speaking, and then just in life in general.
Cool. So it sounds like independence is important, both entrepreneurially and professionally. That's awesome.
Yeah, very much so.
You had said you wanted the small wins, right? The small things. Coming from the dietetic standpoint, that is so important. Getting your person you're working with, client, athlete, whoever, to understand that, hey, look, you had a crappy meal, whatever, not a big deal. Here are the three or four things you did right. You made sure to get it, you know, a smaller size. Your portions were better. Your timing was better. You brought in veggies with every single meal, even if they were crappy veggies. You still did a good job of at least making sure that was an important part to you. Mm-hmm. And that is such an important piece. There, something you can do from a mental performance standpoint or cognitive standpoint, is that something that you really hammer home to your athletes and to your clients? Or is there something that you can kind of expand upon with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that flows really well into, you know, emphasis on the process. And one of the first pieces of homework that I typically give people, and I can't take credit for this, but I certainly use it, it's just three small questions to check in with yourself after an event or a practice or a session or whatever the case may be, is what went well, first and foremost. I ask people to focus on something that went positively for them, because we're really quick to focus in on what we didn't do well. And if we can force ourselves to highlight things that actually went well that we can then replicate, I think that kind of sets the tone for the following question. So first off, what went well? Two or three things or more. Second one is, what can I do better? So not saying, what did I fail at? What did I mess up at? What didn't go well? It's just, what can I do better? What can I work on? And those are the areas where you can say, okay, this is a certain spot where I was lacking in this specific element or whatever. But just get honest with yourself, but also try to stay objective too about what are some of the things I can improve on. And then the third step to that, most important one in my opinion, is how am I going to work on that? And that how piece is so critical, because that becomes your action step. We can say all day long that I need to do better at this, this, and this, but if I don't have an action step in place to actually address how am I going to work on that, then I'm not going to get anywhere. So number three, how am I going to work on that? That is your choice, your opportunity to say, here are my behavioral steps I'm going to take to work on exactly what I identified. And here are the steps I'm going to take to sustain the behaviors that I identified in number one? What did I do well? So I can keep those good things going. But I think that those three questions are really helpful for people to start practicing paying attention to my process. So what am I actually doing here? What can I control? What can I replicate for my next attempt?
Cool. Speaking of your process, and again, how far into the answer you want to go, we've always looked at it, especially as people who create change in either behavior or the physiology of a person, right? There's asymmetric development. It's a time-intensive task, right? You have to put the work in. You can't just do it once and then you're magically the best, right? To your point earlier, I forget while we were talking about it, but it was like, yeah, the confidence thing. If everyone was just confident, everyone would be great. Like, it doesn't work like that, right? There's asymmetry to the process because of time. Mm-hmm. How do you balance your time, and how do you balance or think you're going to balance when you start to add these layers? You have your job. You have consulting with the skill set of your job just outside of your job. You know, most coaches, most nutritionists do the same thing, right? Generally speaking, they all make money by using their expertise in a slightly different niche or industry outside of their main job. As a strength coach, you personal train. As a nutritionist, you have clients. For yourself, you have clients. Now you're adding a whole nother layer, different set of expertise, whole other level of time commitment. You know, how are you going to find the space, or how do you think you're going to find the space to balance that? Because you have, in a sense, three jobs plus, you know, a significant other plus the opportunities and goals to travel and do the other things you want. So you really have like 10 things.
Yeah.
How do you do it? Because I know we all try and we're pretty average at it, I would say. So how do you think you're going to be average at it too? Because like we talked about, there's no perfect balance.
Right. So I don't have a magic bullet by any means, but I can certainly speak to just kind of what I do day to day. Mentally, I try to break down my day to make it more digestible for me. So I'll kind of think of my day in 3-hour chunks. So if I wake up I usually wake up around 4:45, I walk my dogs, get ready for work. So I kind of think of, okay, when I wake up until I go to work, that's my first chunk. Once I get to work, morning until lunch, that's my second chunk. Lunch until I go home, mid-afternoon, next chunk, and then home after work until dinner, that next chunk, and then dinner until bedtime, that next chunk. And that just helps me kind of segment my day and say, okay, what are my certain windows that I can fit in these specific time frames, as opposed to just thinking, I've got all this time today to think about, 24 hours to work through, how am I going to start to even tackle this? By just segmenting it out to start, that helps me find certain windows that are appropriate depending on whatever's going on in that particular segment to then insert different activities. So for example, with the consulting, I set specific hours that I'm willing or available to meet with folks. I'll say about 4:30 to 8:30 timeframe, I'm willing to meet with folks. So if they need to go beyond that, I'll either reschedule, maybe go for a weekend if I'm still working. But also being just having non-negotiables as well is really important for me. So like working out, for example, that's a non-negotiable that I have. No matter if it's a holiday, weekday, weekend, whatever I'm traveling, that's something that I have to do for myself just to stay centered. And I would encourage everybody to think about that as well, as what are your non-negotiables and what are you unwilling to budge on? Something that's important to you, ideally unrelated to work. Because it's so easy to get bogged down in, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this. Just, oh, 5 more minutes, I'll work on this. And then before you know it, it's 5 more hours. But having those non-negotiables set in stone and really sticking to those, I think that's really important to keep some mental clarity. But to your original question, it's just kind of segmenting out my day into those manageable pieces.
That's awesome. So one of our other big questions we ask all our people on the show is, what was your best investment for yourself or for your business for less than $500?
Oh boy. So like I said, I am just starting out. I really haven't invested much money, if at all, but I would say that probably the most significant investment that I've made and continue to make is time. And a lot of what I do, especially with the consulting, everything's through Zoom. You know, you don't have to pay for a lot of what I do, which is great. And I think it's an important point for people to think of as well as, hey, how can I do what I want to do without having to spend a whole lot of money? But in terms of time, I mean, I've invested a lot of time with the real estate side of things, just reading, getting knowledgeable, typing up notes, just kind of streamlining that process. And then for my consulting, I invest time in my clients that, I mean, I don't even charge for. So for example, my first appointment with people is completely free. And I just want to give them the opportunity to meet me, get a sense of what I can offer them. And I want to do the same with them, get to know who they are, what they're looking to accomplish. And I think being willing to do some of those tasks without compensation, I think hopefully that goes a little bit of a long way with clients to know, hey, it's not all about money for this person. They really want to understand where I'm coming from and kind of structure their coaching or consulting to meet my needs. So I think I'd have to say time is probably my biggest investment so far.
Cool. That's a good answer. No one's hit us with that one yet. And I've hit a lot of people with that question over the years, you know, what's the cheapest but most impactful thing? And everyone always references a tangible item. No one has ever hit time as an answer. But I've also never talked to a PhD in psychology. So, you know, it's kind of about.
Well, I can't take full credit for that. I was talking about that idea with my boyfriend a little bit, and he came up with that. So I told him I was going to plagiarize him out of a place of love. So I got to give him credit for that.
Just out of curiosity, is he also in the same profession as you? Is he a totally different? Because I'd be curious, two like-minded and highly intelligent people fighting over the way to do stuff.
He's not in the same field, but he is highly intelligent.
That's why my wife married me, because I'm so dumb, it doesn't matter. One intelligent person, one dumb person.
I'm with you. So Matt actually trained my wife. We were both athletes at UConn when Matt was there. So he knows my wife and actually was her coach at one point. So he knows I'm the lower. I'm like the guy who holds her up just because that's what I can do. Like, you know.
Go out, kick his covers real hard on that one for sure. Real hard.
I can admit it. Speaking of what makes people successful, for me and Matt, it's having significantly more intelligent, beautiful wives. For you, how do you sharpen your sword? What do you do? How does Dr. Sullivan be a better Dr. Sullivan? And then also, how does Megan be a better Megan?
I read a lot. I do podcasts a lot. I just try to stay current with my field. I don't like the feeling of thinking that I know everything, and I never think that I do. I don't like to stay complacent either. So I, you know, if I'm going on a walk or if I'm doing something relatively, you know, not too labor intensive, I always try to throw on a podcast. Or if I'm driving to work, hop on something that's educational and just try to make the most of those open windows when I can. But just staying in the educational realm, staying fresh and current with, you know, new research, things like that. Again, podcasts, asking questions to people who are active in the field. So I know I've picked Matt's brain quite a bit about his real estate, and just keeping a degree of humility as well is really important to me. And not, again, not thinking that I know everything, because I know that I don't. So just being willing to ask questions.
So do you have a coach or somebody that you go to? Maybe not, you know, or maybe you do have multiple coaches, almost like a brain trust where you have, you know, a performance coach or a strength coach, and then you have a mental coach, and then you have, you know, a dietitian. Or who do you go to? Like, do you have a specific person coaching you for individual parts of your life?
I wouldn't say I have a formal coach, but I certainly do have my network of people, my support system. I mean, my parents have been huge my entire life, and they continue to be very supportive in terms of, you know, financial advice. They're always supporting me for the real estate endeavors and even my consulting as well. I've got a tremendous mentor from grad school that we're still, we've known each other about 7 years now, and he's my rock. So I go to him for professional advice, just to vent. He does his own side hustle as well. So he's been and will continue to be probably one of my most important people that I turn to. And then, of course, you, Matt, you've been a great help for me as well.
Oh, don't blow his head up too big. You got to see him tomorrow at work. He's, you know, come on.
Come on. Massive. I mean, if I tried to play college football right now, it wouldn't fit. Get on there. It'd be terrible.
So you mentioned mentors. What do you recommend? How do you approach the topic? Specifically, because there's two routes, right? I've heard people say you should have mentors, you should have one and they should be your person, or you should have as many as you can find who, you know, fit your bill of goods for what you need. Mm-hmm. And I see the other side where people are like, if you commit too much to someone else's philosophy, you lose yourself. And, you know, you can become the cultish follower of someone's dogma. You know, where do you stand on the line and how do you give that advice to people?
Yeah, mentorship is kind of a tricky one because some people think you can just call up somebody and say, hey, will you be my mentor? And then there's just this beautiful relationship that emerges. But I really believe that there has to be some sort of organic, to use your term, organic growth there. You have to like the person, you have to value where they're coming from, you have to get along as people. And so in that respect, I think it's really important to choose your mentors for reasons beyond just what they can give you. And so how do they support you as a person, not just in the endeavor that you're working towards, but just overall? I agree that if you latch onto one person only, you're obviously only going to get their perspectives on things, kind of like with friends. But if you have too many of them, then are you really friends? Are there meaningful connections with all these people, or are they just more resources to you at that point? And I think if you get to have too many mentors, quote unquote, I think they almost stop being mentors at that point because it's hard to invest in those relationships if they're too numerous. Mm-hmm. So I think kind of a happy medium, maybe 2, 3, 4 max, maybe depending on how many different avenues you're looking at. And then even having people in the same, same category that you're working towards, just to get different perspectives on that same avenue, I think could be helpful as well.
Yeah, cool. No, I'm always very curious what people say to that because, again, everyone's personal experience feeds into how they think about it and then everything else. But for you and what you do specifically, I would imagine mm-hmm. there is a large part of getting people to have, like you said, you have your grad school mentor who's your rock. That's, you know, you have to have someone like that. But to your point, when they're a good person, it's a whole different dynamic than just having them be a technical and or educational counterpart.
Right, exactly.
Very cool. Paul, what else, man?
No, I think she's absolutely crushed just about everything we've thrown at her. The only thing she didn't do is spend any money, which is pretty much the whole point of this podcast. So I think she's...
I'm a saver.
Yeah. What's the... Okay. Give me something small. Give me a story about how being a saver and actually saving and having the plan and getting there got you something. Was it a trip? Was it a dog? What kind of dog do you have? A dogs, plural.
I have 2 dogs. We've got an Alaskan Malamute purebred. We've got a 30-pound rescue black dog. I don't know what she is.
She's a dog. Is your Malamute heterochromic? 2 eyes?
It has 2 eyes of the same color.
My daughter has 1 blue and 1 brown. So we always she's a husky. And nice. my wife and I were both Yukon huskies. So, you know.
Wow, you made a husky.
See what I did there? Yeah. All right, so savings. What was, if you self-describe saver for life, and I'm sure you've taken jabs for it from people, what's something you've been able to save and accomplish because you're financially savvy with how you spend your money that people your age or people in your circle can't, but you did?
I bought a house this past year, so that was a big girl step. Thank you. Yep. That's probably the biggest purchase that I've made aside from stupid French drain that I won't get into. But yeah, this has been my most adult purchase. So I'm going to have to go with my house.
So kind of using that. Oh, sorry, Joe, go ahead.
Go.
I was just going to say, kind of using that, what advice would you give to anyone else out there who wants to get into the cognitive or mental performance field?
I would say listen to as many different sources as you can. Reason being is that there's a lot of schools of thought. I've shared my perspective here with kind of the acceptance and commitment approach. It's not right for everybody. There's a lot of different approaches out there. And as much as you can, try to think through your own experiences about some of maybe what your tendencies are, where some of your blind spots might be, and how you can start to apply some of these tips and tricks to yourselves before you start to apply them or work with other people on them. But there's a ton of resources out there. This field has been expanding pretty rapidly over the past decade or so, especially in the military population as well as the athletic realm. But I think, you know, like I said, it's growing really rapidly. There's a ton of opportunities out there to job shadow, to have, you know, video conferences, ask people what their experiences have been like, ask questions about the schooling if you're looking to go more of the educational route. There's a ton of avenues as well, in addition to sport or military. I mean, this is really popular as well in businesses and consulting for, you know, more of a professional audience. But I think just ask as many questions as you can. That's really the best way to get after this.
Joe, if you ever watched Billions, I've told her many a time she needs to go to Wall Street and basically just be the main female character from Billions, where she just runs the whole, you know, hedge fund. And oh man, I'd be so excited about that, dude. So excited.
And when you need someone to get your coffee, I'm your guy. Yeah. Well, we'll just be there in suits, walking around, pushing people out of the way and getting you coffee. As long, as long as Pampers ain't cheap, Pampers ain't cheap.
That's my dream job right there, Joe. You literally just said I get to walk around in a suit and push people around New York City. It's literally my dream job. Couldn't ask for anything more.
I know. Speaking of resources, what there's just some of the notes I've been taking as we've been talking. What things you mentioned, podcasts, are there anything specific, whether they're like bigger pockets, if we're going housing, I know that's kind of the one, but we talked about journaling, we talked about podcasts, we talked about all these different things. What would be a website, or are you a bullet journal person, or are you a blah, 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 blah? What are they?
Yeah. So for my journaling, I use an app called Dailyo. And like I said, it can send you notifications throughout the day or at one point in the day just to say, hey, what's your mood at? What was your day like? And then you can write down anything that's on your mind or that, you know, you experience throughout the day. And then you can kind of label different categories that you engaged with for the day. In terms of podcasts or books, I'm a really big fan of the Growth Equation podcast. They also have a website, thegrowtheq.com. But those are Brad Stolberg and Steve Magnus, and they're the authors of Peak Performance and The Passion Paradox. And I think Peak Performance is probably my favorite book. Number one recommendation for people interested, I guess back to your question, Matt, people interested in getting into this field, is they've got really great insights that are, you know, kind of consistent with what I do, with what my approach is, but they're also very fair to, you know, other different disciplines as well. But they're very no nonsense. I like that. I like their approach. Their podcast is great. They've got a ton of great content, and it applies to sport and performance. It applies to, you know, day-to-day life, eating habits, nutrition, exercise, anything that you can imagine that has a performance related component. I think they do a really great job at hitting on all those different avenues.
Nice. Yeah, no, I Growth Equation, I've heard of. So now I got one to look up and search after and find. You mentioned a book you recommend to everyone. Powell, I think, what's yours? I don't think I've ever asked you, Matt, what's the book you always recommend to people, or the one you kind of say, this is the one?
Yeah, it's this strength coach, Joe Staub. He wrote a book. It's pretty damn good. I've been referenced in it. Not a big deal. Don't worry about it. No, I don't know, man. It's a great question. I think it really depends on, you know, what you want to accomplish and going back to your why and going back to, you know, what your definition of success is.
Hold on. Let me shrink my head a little bit. Hold on. Bring it in. Okay.
No, but I think my answer changes so many times based on what somebody wants to accomplish, right? So when Megan came to me and asked me about real estate, I immediately knew I was going to Bigger Pockets. I was going to Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I was going to all those classic ones, cash flow quadrant. I mean, you can get into a whole deal there, right? But if you came to me and said, hey, I want to know more about dietetics, I could go a whole different way. We could go, you know, Tipton and Wolf and, you know, Kramer and Volek. I mean, we could go a million different ways there. So it really just depends on what you want to do. So I don't really have a specific one book that really breaks it down. I need to know kind of where you want to go.
All right. So, Doc, flip it back to you. Fundamental to personal development outside of specific niche, outside of specific education, what's the one book you would recommend to anyone at any level who's just trying to be a better them?
Probably Atomic Habits by James Clear. Not to toot your horn, Matt, again, but he shared that title with me, and I reference that so much for myself and also for people that I work with. He's so simple in the way that he shares stuff, but everything makes complete sense. And if you're talking about gaining self-awareness and starting at ground zero, that is the place to start. Atomic Habits.
Nice. No, Matt, you brought up a great point. So I had to go there because, you know, for me, it's first things first, Stephen Covey, right? Especially in the collegiate space dealing with 18 to 22 year olds. I mean, again, dogmatically, you can take Covey for what he is. Some of it becomes a little cultish, but, you know, the true north, in a sense, finding yourself, you got to start somewhere. So that's the one I always kick out to people. And Doc, I'm looking on your Instagram. Wrong side of the river, Doc. Wrong side of the river. I was in Kansas. You were in Missouri. Should we even be having this conversation?
Probably not. We should probably delete this whole thing.
I know. I was in Lawrence. I was worked with KU from 11 to 14 and actually worked with the softball team for a significant time.
I worked in baseball.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Well, I think at the time, baseball, we always beat you guys anyways.
That was before I got there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, just as we're clicking and doing stuff. Yeah, Columbia, though, I'm pretty sure KU has a pretty good sports psychology program. I mean, you could have come to say, you know, I got to do it because
I'm done with school.
I got to do it. If I don't, someone's going to yell at me. There's still people there. You know, I only worked there for a few years, but it's a thing. So
that's fair. That's fair.
I heard something about like all the trees lean to the east or to the west. Something about somebody sucks or something. I don't know. I heard a whole joke about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they always go towards the east because that's where Missouri is relative to Kansas. So everything's just like.
It just makes sense.
Yeah. Though, in fairness, my wife's wedding ring, if I can get that out, I bought on the Missouri side of the river because the jewelry store had great quality but was cheaper.
Man, surprised you admit that. You said yes.
Yeah. I mean, we lived in the better place. We were just smarter because the prices were lower. I mean, that's good business.
Oh, man.
All right, that's enough of my dig. Sorry.
We can edit that in post. We'll be fine. Hey, Megan, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. You pretty much knocked every question out of the park. You provided so much insight over our conversations that, you know, I think a lot of people will take a lot away from this and understand that, hey, it's not always emotion-based. And so many times when you go into investing or to a new situation, you're so emotion-based and so many things come up and things you either didn't expect or, you know, things happen. But and if you go through some of the steps and processes you outlined today, I think a lot more people will be successful. So thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
No problem. Is there anything you want to plug? Do you want to plug your Instagram again or website in the near future? And obviously, we're excited to see you be a real estate mogul here sometime soon as well.
Sure. Yeah, I'll just repeat my Instagram handle. It's Dr. MC Sullivan, DR for doctor. I'm at Instagram again. I offer my first sessions are free. So it's a 30-minute appointment if you're interested. Knock that out. And then if you're interested in pursuing some work after that, we can talk business. But nothing to lose by reaching out. So please get in touch if interested.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll definitely have some shooters listening to the show, hopefully. And then we'll have some strength coaches and other, you know, fitness people, athletic trainers, et cetera. And they need just as much help as they can get mentally. So that works out just perfect.
Yep. Yeah. I got a couple people in mind who I might shoot a little text and say, check this particular lady out on Instagram, shoot her a message. It might be helpful because you're starting to, you need it.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, thank you so much again. We really appreciate it. Have a great night and we appreciate it.
All right. You too. Take care, guys. Be safe.